Hello, here is your KVNF regional newscast for Wednesday, January 17th. More than 2 months after being accused of sexual harassment and intimidation at the state capitol, Representative Steve Lebsock wrote a 28-page letter to his House colleagues describing his side of the story, including sexual explicit allegations. Benta Berkland has more.
The document is the latest in a series of counterclaims by the Democrat who has had formal complaints filed against him by two women, including fellow Democratic Representative Faith Winter. It comes ahead of a possible vote to oust him from the legislature.
Don't you think it would be prudent and a fair thing to do for you to give out your side of the story to your colleagues before your colleagues actually vote on your expulsion?
That's Representative Steve Lebsock. Since we first broke this story last November, three other women have publicly accused him of inappropriate and intimidating behavior.
It's not retaliation. It was meant to be a confidential communication between myself and my colleagues.
But some, including Bree Franklin, believe the letter goes against the General Assembly's workplace harassment policy that forbids retaliation. Franklin is the executive director of the Colorado Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Even sending something out to other legislators or to the entire workplace is breaching confidentiality. This is a fear why victims don't want to report and don't want to go through a process.
When a person formally complains of sexual harassment, ultimately to leadership in the House or Senate, the complaint is considered private, but the accuser can make it public, and the person being accused can also make it public.
Informally publishing the details of these women's complaints and his responses to those complaints outside of the formal process is completely inappropriate.
Jennifer Droback is a law professor at Indiana University and a national expert on sexual harassment. She reviewed Lebsock's letter and says he's trying to discredit the complainant, which is why we've not referenced what's in the document in this story.
It's nothing new, and it's regrettable, and it just highlights that this problem has not gone away and needs to be firmly and swiftly addressed.
Nonpartisan legislative attorneys have said the harassment policy does allow concerns about retaliation to be added to existing formal complaints. And this isn't the first time Lebsock has gone on the offensive. In December, he paid for his own polygraph test, telling the media that he was asked four questions about Representative Winter and passed. He says it exonerates him from the allegations.
I think they probably picked on the right person, because I'm going to expose the people who have lied.
A top polygraph expert we interviewed at the time said the results of a lie detector test are unreliable. Democratic Representative Brittany Pedersen of Lakewood says Lebsock's efforts to try to debunk the claims against him have hurt him more than helped.
This is absurd and desperate.
Representative Lebsock isn't the only lawmaker at the state capitol facing allegations of sexual harassment. Senate Republicans Randy Baumgartner and Jack Tate also have formal complaints filed against them, but each have said little beyond their initial denials when we first broke our stories also in November. We're still waiting on the results of the formal investigations into Tate, Baumgartner, and Lebsock. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
Rocky Mountain Community Radio Exchange member KDNK in Carbondale interviewed U.S. Congressman Scott Tipton before the current session about his goals moving into 2018.
Congressman Tipton, thank you very much for joining me for this month's update. Can you talk about some of your priorities and goals for this session?
First of all, as I know many people, particularly in the 3rd Congressional District, are aware, we hadn't really been participating in the economic recovery. We're pleased to be able to see the tax reform go through that's going to be empowering people with more of their dollars, enhancing our businesses' ability to be able to grow. We're hearing good reports actually coming out of our district with bonuses that are beginning out and wage increases as well. I think that that's critical really for our district in terms of job preservation and job growth. We're going to continue to focus on dealing with the opioid crisis that we're seeing, not only in our district, statewide and nationwide, to be able to address. This is a crisis impacting so many families and individuals, and seeking ways to be able to be solutions-oriented, to be able to get the treatments in place, and to be able to discourage use, be it from a medical practitioner to unfortunately, people turning to heroin as well on the street. We're also, in terms of jobs, once again, advocating strongly for that all of the above approach. We just had the markup on our bill, Planning for America's Energy Future Act, that calls literally for wind, solar, geothermal, hydroelectric, oil, gas, oil, shale, minerals, to be able to create jobs, but also equally important, what those jobs will be producing in terms of American energy security and affordable energy, which helps not only our businesses, but people having to be able to pay that electric bill at home or filling up their gas tank as they're going to be driving to work. Senator Gardner and I are working on a piece of legislation. I've introduced it in the House, and he has a companion piece of legislation in the Senate to be able to move the BLM headquarters to the West. We haven't identified which community in the West. I certainly have some of my particular favorites to where I would like to be able to see it go. But to be able to get the BLM out to where the vast amount of our public lands in the country are, and to be able to have that real connection to an area and lands that we all value and want to be able to protect. We're also going to be focusing a lot in terms of infrastructure moving forward. One piece of infrastructure that is often overlooked but is really critical for a lot of rural communities, and particularly those in our district, is fiber optics, getting that out into the communities, and making sure that we're having that connectivity for businesses to be able to grow, good for education, good for medicine, and this needs to be included in any type of an infrastructure package that we'd like to be able to see move through Congress. I'm hopeful that we'll be able to replicate in that infrastructure package what we've been able to do with the legislation that we have passed through committee and then also on the House floor to be able to get that good bipartisan support. Also, when we're looking at a lot of our rural communities here as well, we're looking at access to capital. Interestingly, Amy, across the country, a number of individuals have not been able to open bank accounts simply because of regulations in individual states. Is able to pass with unanimous support out of the Financial Services Committee, the Mobile Act. Hopefully we're going to be able to see that on the floor and be able to pass that over and get it over to the Senate. But you'd be able to open up a bank account with your driver's license over your phone. Then that information would obviously be destroyed. It's just for opening up the bank account. But to make sure that the technological opportunities for access to capital, for people to be able to lead their lives with new devices is moving this into the 21st century for the people in rural America as well. And also, we've got a variety of pieces of legislation that we're going to be looking at to be able to provide the access to capital for small businesses and to be able to, again, create those jobs.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Wednesday. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould.